First item on the agenda, certification of compliance. We all good?
We are. We are certified. We need compliance.
And then we jump right in. Aquatic invasive species upgrade.
Yes, Scott.
So some of you might know me. I'm Scott Coe. I'm with Wisconsin Sea Grant, and I'll explain what Sea Grant is and all of this aquatic invasive species and what I'm trying to do in Kenosha along with Racine and Milwaukee counties. And so I'm really hoping by the end of this presentation you'll understand why we invest in AIS prevention and monitoring, how the state has supported those types of activities, who's involved in AIS activities in our area, and work is being done to prevent and monitor for aquatic invasive species. So first, I kind of just want to throw a definition out there so we're all on the same page about what an invasive species is. It's non-native, and it can be a plant, animal, or pathogen, and this is the important part, it has some sort of impact, whether it be economical, environmental, or harm to human health. And invasive species are successful because they come from somewhere else into our native environments. They have usually no natural predators. They tend to be aggressive and can mature very quickly, they can reproduce very quickly, and then they can outcompete with our native species. And the impacts are all across the board. It alters habitat, impacts native fisheries, it can decrease water availability, it can block our transportation routes, so you think about boating in water, or even just swimming in water. And it can lead to degraded water quality. So we have an abundance of invasive species like this Eurasian water milfoil. We have a lot of nutrients going on in the lake with something called eutrophication, algae blooms. I'm sure you're all familiar with that. The other reason why we want to talk about prevention is because of the cost of controlling invasive species. So try not to get too caught up in like the wording down below, but basically time on the bottom. And then over time, once an invasive species kind of comes into an area, it's going to continue to grow and spread, and with that, the cost. So if we can get ahead of the problem, you know, prevention, an ounce of prevention, the pound of cure, is kind of like the idea there. So if we can get ahead, we can educate people, we can prevent, we can try to save us a lot more headache and dollars down the road. And so because of that, the state of Wisconsin said, all right, we need to create some sort of a continued revenue source. So they created, through their surface water grant, this Lake Monitoring and Protection Network. Started in 2021, and this is, what, the fourth year in the program, third year? And almost every county in the state is participating in it. Ozaukee County is actually participating in it next year. So everyone's participating in it, more or less. The legislator has allocated $1 million annually to support these counties, you know, in this work. It's non-competitive, so basically like you submit the application and you get it. Funding is based on what kind of water resources are in the county, the condition of those water resources, so are there KIS present, are there not, are there exceptional waters, who's participating in what kind of AIS activities, which I'll get into those activities bit, and then you know what kind of population, visitor spending is going on in the area. So Kenosha County, you get about 13,000 a year, and that's based on that funding model. And so that money then goes towards staff, equipment, and travel to coordinating AIS monitoring and prevention activities. And so when this program came about back in 2020-2021, Milwaukee, Racine, and Kenosha counties decided that instead of going about this on their own, that they would pool the resources to create a part-time position administered through the University of Wisconsin Sea Grant. And that's where I come aboard. So we have three counties plus the Great Lakes Community Conservation Corps in Racine, Brown Lakes Sanitary District in Racine, and Urban Ecology Center, Milwaukee County, all kind of rounding out kind of like my advisory board, so kind of the people that are kind of giving input. And so when I say counties, I'm talking about our county conservations there. And so they're kind of directing, along with me, giving input into where we go with this program. The other side, we have like the DNR, kind of giving policy and funding. Wisconsin Lakes, which is like a citizen advocacy nonprofit, and Extension Lakes, they all kind of work together. There's a whole bunch of state partners that kind of work together to help inform what kind of activities should be undertaken and more or less how. And then what I do is take all that information and all the like those opinions and, you know, try to engage citizens. You know, last year I helped residents from Falcon Heights. I've worked with like people like Hooker Lake Management District and Harborside Academy in Kenosha. So those are kind of the type of groups I'm working with. So a little bit about Wisconsin Sea Grant. So it's a statewide organization. It's funded through NOAA. Our goal here in Wisconsin is to support enhanced sustainable use, conservation, and health of our Great Lakes resources. So that being water and the well-being of their communities that are connected to those waters. And we cover everything from aquaculture, aquatic invasive species, coastal processes and engineering. So by that, it's like bluff erosion. I know we've had our staff engineer work over at the Kenosha Dunes on some projects. We do water quality, resilient coastlines. I mean, anything related to water, we kind of have a stake in it, whether it's research, education, or outreach. And so, if we were county operating our own, we'd be, you know, you'd be with your resources. But with Sea Grant, we're able to tap into a couple other resources because of our connections to some federal organizations like NOAA and the Wildlife Service. We also work with the Great Lakes Commission and a couple state regional agencies, Fox Wolf Rivershed Alliance, Watershed Alliance, Extension, is it University of Wisconsin Extension? I forget, they keep changing the name. And then being in Southeast Wisconsin, so not just being a part of a county, but being in this regional, we're able to tap into like resources here with like Extension Kenosha County and Racine County. So I think we're able to add a little bit more value to this program because of our connections. So that kind of is like who I am and why I'm here. Does anyone have any questions about that? Alright, well now I'll kind of dive into the programming. So the main overarching goal is we're trying to improve surface water quality by either detecting, preventing, or controlling aquatic invasive species and monitoring lake water quality. And I do this through three main tracks. Lake and river monitoring, where we're trying to detect new species, tracking existing species, all with the goal of trying to inform better management of our lakes and waters. The next one is AIS prevention, and so there we're trying to educate people about the risk of aquatic invasive species, so like talking to you tonight, talking, letting you know a little bit about what they are, and then we're trying to reduce the spread and introduction. We do this through water guard inspections, providing signage at boat launches, and outreach activities. And then the last one, I know I said I do monitoring and prevention, I do a little bit with control, and that the goal there is to try to impact the reduce the impacts of AIS, and that's through our purple loosestrife biocontrol, so a non-chemical control. So now I'll kind of just kind of go through what each of those are, break those programs down a little further. So we have the citizen lake monitoring, so there we're sending people out to collect water quality data. This is a volunteer-based program. They're doing Secchi discs, so I don't know if you're familiar with Secchi discs, the black and white discs, the lorem in the water. You see, you know, you try to figure out when you don't see the disc anymore, and that kind of gives you a clue of the health of the lake. I primarily help with that, and then aquatic invasive species monitoring. So we try to get people out there monitoring their lakes, just having eyes out on the lake to see what's out there, if there's something new. If there's something new, we can do something about it before it becomes a larger problem. Through the DNR, they have rapid response grants. So they have their normal like grant cycle, but if someone finds a prohibited aquatic invasive species on a water, we can tap into this funding and try to get some help out there to address it. So participants in the CLMM program, we've had 7. We brought 2 on this year at Cross Lake and Burn Wolf Lake. Historically, we're about 50% of lakes plus or minus every year that participate. Some people come in and out, and I kind of see it that being, you know, where we stay. You know, it's a volunteer-based program, and it requires you going out during the middle of the day, typically a weekday, so I think you get an idea of who's participating in those. So that's lake monitoring. The other side is river monitoring. We have a program called Project Red, kind of the same idea, getting people out there, monitoring rivers and creeks, trying to map out where existing populations of AIS are, and to keep their eyes out for any new detections. This is a somewhat new program. They kind of rebranded it and redid the guidance on that. So I'm trying to roll that out this year a little bit better in my target areas in Kenosha County, or the Pike River and the Fox River. Next one, Snapshot Day, another monitoring event, but this is kind of a one-off day, so it's not as big of a commitment as the other two. This has been going on since 2020 across the state, and it's really, it's partly about going out there and monitoring, but the other big part of it is just like trying to get more people involved in what monitoring is and what AIS is. So that's really like the focus of the program, is just exposing people to this. So last year there's 22 events all across the state, and the program continues to grow. It's kind of been fun to be a part of it. What I do is, because I'm a three-county area and I'm only one person, I try to rotate through the counties. So last year I held it in Racine. And I tend to focus more on kind of our highly, you know, our urban areas, our highly populated areas. A lot of my work can take place in kind of like lake communities or natural areas, so this is a great way to get people that might not live on a body of water or close to a body of water out. Numbers haven't always been great, about 5 to 10 volunteers usually per year I have helping, but we get out and we monitor waters that might not have been monitored before, or maybe in the last 10 years, and we find new things. And based on what people are saying, they seem to have a good time of exploring a new area and kind of seeing a different way of interacting with the environment. So last year is Racine, this year is Kenosha, kind of focusing on the city of Kenosha, the eastern part of the county. Last year did a lot of monitoring. Down in our region, it's a mix of me going out and monitoring, so I try to fill in the gaps of where we haven't had monitoring before, or if a citizen calls and says, hey, I found something, I'm not sure what it is, I come out and take a look. So that's kind of the spread. Based on this last year, we found kind of some typical invasive species for southeastern Wisconsin. I mean, due to our history of being connected to the Great Lakes and shipping and ballast waters, which is like one of the main pathways that invasive species have come to our area, these are pretty common to see. The Phragmites, the purple loose stripe, the round goby was detected on the Pike River system. That's what you're seeing in the lower left corner. One that we found a couple years ago on Camp Lake is starry stonewort. That's kind of like the new one that's making its rounds. So my guess is because of where it was found on Camp Lake, which is in that kind of that portion of Kenosha County where there's like 10 lakes or so in that region. They're very interconnected. I wouldn't be surprised if we start seeing starry stonewort on those lakes. Starry stonewort's kind of it's like a good and bad case. Like, it's bad because we find it about 10, 20 feet off a boat ramp, and it spreads by fragmentation. So if your boat goes through it, the propeller chops it up, that's sending out little fragments, and those are all gonna turn into new plants. And so it spreads very quickly, and it spreads in an area that gets a lot of traffic. However, based on research from the DNR and other states, we're seeing that if you kind of let it be, it kind of goes through this like boom and then bust. So it almost like kind of takes over a little area, but then it starts to like fit in with the local ecology and might not be as terrible as we think it is, at least compared to something like curly pondweed or Eurasian water milfoil, which is just everywhere. And then this is a photo of Lake Michigan Bluff. I'm starting to see we have Japanese knotweed. So this was taken in the fall and everything's dead and dying, but you can see completely taken over the hillside, the bluff side. Japanese knotweed is known to create erosion, so it's likely that in the future they're going to have some issues with flexibility there. So kind of going forward this year, those are the four programs that I've kind of mentioned. It's the lake monitoring is the CLMN, Snapshot Day, Project Red, and then AS monitoring is kind of what I do to fill in the gaps. And this year I'm trying to focus more on like watershed level monitoring, a little bit more systematic than how I've done before. So I'm focusing on our Lake Michigan watersheds and then on the far western side, those connected in the Twin Lakes area. And so that's kind of all I'll be going, targeting. And then kind of going forward, it's probably the Fox River watershed, which kind of is like Twin Lakes, Salem, kind of the western half, and then the eastern half the year after that. So this is just a quick summary of what invasive species we have in Kenosha County, aquatic invasive species. Just a couple things I want to highlight. Our most common one is curly leaf pondweed, which I've put a picture of, in Eurasian water milfoil. Like 60 to 70% of lakes have those on there. Most lakes have an active management plan treating that, whether that's weed harvesting or using a pesticide or an herbicide. The other one we see a lot of is purple loosestrife. You're going to find those in like wetland areas, very flowery purple. Pretty plant to see, however, it likes to take over wetlands. I'll show you in a slide later on, but Camp Lake, along the whole entire shoreline, it's everywhere. And so that's crowding out our native wetland species and reducing that biodiversity that we want to see in those productive wetlands. The other one we see a lot of is zebra mussel. And then, like I said, starry stonemore is the one we're starting to see make its rounds. And so I highlighted, you know, which ones are most popular, and then I also highlighted which lakes we see the most on, and it kind of makes sense. You know, Elizabeth Lake, so our twin lakes, Elizabeth and Mary, Silver Lake, Powers Lake, Paddock Lake, you know, our larger lakes that get a little bit more regional traffic. And that really makes sense. Kind of once an invasive species gets here, it starts to make its ways around through hitchhiking, so on a boat from lake to lake, they don't take off their boat. And that's why we have programs like watercraft inspections. So that's where we try to send, so we have to a boat ramp where they talk to boaters and say, hey, you know, we have an issue with AIS. And the best way we can do to prevent it is to inspect your boat, remove any attached plants or animals, drain any water you have on your boat, live well, anywhere, and never move any live bait from water to water. So this is kind of the results we've had in the last 3 years. We've had a hard time establishing a local partner to doing watercraft inspections. I was able to hire someone in 2022 that split time between Milwaukee and Camp Lake. So we got a little bit there, but this seems to be an issue with our lake organizations, is having the capacity to fund a program like this. And so I'm hoping, I've started to talk to the DNR about how we can support them and getting them on board with this program to just do these watercraft inspections and educate boaters that visit the lakes. This is kind of like a low-hanging fruit, just having a sign out there, so people that come and go off waters, you know, they might not see a person out there, but they'll at least see this signage saying, hey, you know, practice these prevention steps, it is the law. So I try to go around and make sure that we got signs out there, that they're not banged up, and that people can see them. So through Kenosha, the extension here, I've been able to submit a couple articles, news articles. So I try to, you know, let people know, like the southeastern, that we have starry stonemore in southeastern Wisconsin that's spreading around, kind of some of our bait laws, they can be kind of tricky. Put an article out about that. And then also Phragmites, which you're probably seeing a lot of in our right-of-ways. So it's those tall, grassy, kind of flowery plants.
Redhead?
I don't know if I've ever heard it called redhead. redhead?
Yep.
They do. Once the seed pods, just before they mature, they turn into radiation color.
Because I called DNR on it, and they said, oh, no, it's a native plant. Because it was overtaking my entire pond. It was driving me crazy.
There are only a few native Phragmites, one in Door County area, but predominantly in Wisconsin, especially in the coastal areas that we have, it's all non-native.
That's a problem.
Yeah. I know around retention ponds too, it's teasel and thistle.
Yeah.
Those are the two biggies. Choke out any sort of native grasses. It's really bad.
Yeah.
I see it everywhere.
I'll kind of touch on something about that in a second.
Okay.
Any other questions? Yeah, we're definitely seeing a lot of Phragmites. So, other part of prevention is just kind of getting the word out. I usually make my way around to Gateway Technical College. I'm also talking to UW Parkside. I was able to make it out to Silver Lake's annual district meeting to tell them about some of these programs and how they can get their folks involved. Did a fun field trip to the Wisconsin River, which the Harborside Academy was floating down the river. I came out and joined them on a day, and we did a little bit of monitoring. Got to talk to them about Great Lakes aquatic invasive species and how they can prevent them. And so this is something me and Vijay kind of partnered on. It was this right-of-way training, kind of talking about wetland and terrestrial invasive species. So we did cover teasel and a little bit on thistle. But we were able to bring over Mark Retz from UW Extension. It's just a wealth of knowledge on treating roadside invasive species, whether that's using like a growth inhibitor or just timing it out so that you're not creating more of a problem. So with invasive species, you know, going to seed, it's getting out there before they go to seed and making the whole issue worse. So I was really happy with the turnout here. We had a whole bunch of people from City of Burlington, City of Kenosha, and then Racine County. And so this is one way to kind of help our right-of-way managers kind of just be more informed about their role in managing the landscape and how invasive species can impact it and what they can do to kind of help contribute to reducing that spread. This is another one I had a lot of fun with, Cross Lake. I got them involved in the lake monitoring this year and then aquatic invasive species monitoring. They don't have a lake organization, so I kind of used this event to kind of prime the pump a little bit about them trying to get some sort of organization going out there, but they have a lot of issues with land use and fertilizers and nutrients coming into the lake, and they kind of wanted me to speak to their community about, like, what are aquatic plants? You know, are they all just weeds? What's invasive? And so I came out and did that. It was a lot of fun. Collected samples from the lake, brought it in, showed them, you know, these are your five most common native plants. These are your five most common invasive plants, so they could start to tell the difference. And I can tell that they're wanting to take a step forward. I know there's some issues a couple years ago with them potentially forming a lake district, but I think they're headed in the right direction with trying. So I think they're trying to take more of a top-down approach to it by forming a lake district. I think by bringing me in and the conversations we're starting to have, we're taking more of a bottom-up, community-focused, forming an organization and then building up capacity and resources from there. So it's really encouraging to see them take control of that. It's definitely a unique lake in the sense that half of it is in Wisconsin, half of it is in Illinois, so there's some jurisdictional issues that make it challenging. Last is the control. So I said I do purple loosestrife biocontrol. Did a lot in Kenosha County because there's a lot here. Each spring I go out and I dig these purple loosestrife plants up. I throw them in a pot, cover them with a net, and I grow them. And then I go out and collect Garicella beetles, and so I collected them. We have established populations on Rock and George Lake, and so I went out and collected about 10 beetles per plant, and then those beetles will lay their eggs, die off, and then for every one beetle you get about 100 juvenile beetles, and so then I can take those and release them on purple loosestrife infestations, and they kind of do the work for you. They, as you can see in this middle picture here, they chew at the plant. They eat it and they cause it to not be as prolific. So the plant might still exist, but we're not seeing it produce flowers and seeds. One of the ways purple loosestrife spreads is by its seed head. 2 million seeds in one plant and one seed head. So if it's able to not get into that seed production, that's really great. This is kind of more of a long-term solution to invasive species management, where if you go out with an herbicide and spray something, you might see results right away, that plant's dead. This kind of helps it bring into more of a natural equilibrium with the environment. No chemicals used, maybe $10 in supplies. I put water in the ponds every couple days. Usually the rains take care of that. And then I go out and I release them. And so I release some from the site, from where I collected some of the plants from. So the across the street from the Kenosha Airport. I also released some on Center and Camp Lakes, and a couple others in Racine County. So that's something where I try to get people involved. I was able to get Hooker Lake involved this last year. I kind of just put together like a very simple plan that they could follow, mapping out, you know, these are your highest densities of purple loosestrife. This is where I recommend setting out, you know, one or two plants. I help them dig the plants, find the beetles, and then they went ahead and I think partnered with Stosha High School, got some kids involved in growing the plants and then setting the plants out. So that's exactly what I want to do. My job is to coordinate and get people to essentially do these programs. And so that was a big success story. But there's not always that capacity, and so that's where I try to step in. And so Camp in Center Lake, I've worked with them before with the Starry Stonewort. I went around and mapped their purple loosestrife this last year. They have a ton on the lake. I'm going to put together a little plan for them, and I'm going to do some of the beetle rearing and releasing for them. And then I mentioned earlier, I helped out Franklin Falcon Heights subdivision. They have Phragmites around one of their drainage ponds, and so I put together just a little document kind of outlining the issue and some contacts and resources they could to pursue that in a kind of like a best management plan for them. So they have some guidance on, you know, the issue and what they can be doing. So hopefully I didn't go too long, but that's my work in a nutshell. I can take any questions if you have any. Yeah.
You showed that particular fish as invasive. What was it called?
The round goby.
Okay. Now, why is it a problem if it's in a pond or in a lake? Does it eat other fish or what? I mean, what does it destroy the food that other fish eat, or what, how is it? How does it compete?
Yeah, so that one, it's taking so it eats microinvertebrates, so like small insects, and so it's because we have such a high population of it, it's taking such a dent out of it that native populations of small fish that, you know, might eat on that don't have access to that. You know, they have a reduced food supply. They also, I think I've read that they will disrupt the spawning habitats of other fish too, just because of how they spawn, like in the same areas and just like a lot more.
Where is its origin?
Round goby is actually from the Atlantic Ocean. So it's native to America in a sense, but it's not native to the Great Lakes Basin. And so it got in through opening up all those canals and waterways, and eventually it made its way in. So it's a big one in the Great Lakes, and what we're starting to see is it's starting to make its way up waterways. Kind of a good thing is we have dams, and so that's prevented some of that. We're starting to do some dam removal, so it's allowing them to go a little bit further upstream.
So, a lot of what you just talked about is something that Felix has been talked about in a lot of the lake districts in the county for many, many years.
Yeah.
And so in particular, in the village of Twin Lakes, we've got the Twin Lakes Lake District, which encompasses the entire village, so we keep track of both lakes, and we've got committees that aquatic and invasive species, stuff like that. So have you ever talked to anybody at the Twin Lakes Lake District at all, or? We have an annual meeting, usually the end of July, one of the weekends.
A couple years ago, I talked to, because you guys are tied in with the village of Twin Lakes, right? Someone from the village government, I talked to them about that and this stuff, and they said, like, we've been hit in the past with this kind of stuff, give us a break. So, if there's interest for me to come back out, I'm more than happy to come back out and talk.
There's always, there's a lot of folks that are on part of committees and do monitoring and stuff like that, so I wouldn't see why they wouldn't want additional help or eyes on the situation.
Yeah, is there like someone I can follow up with about that?
Sure. Me.
Okay.
And then it's just, what's his name? Tony Mygon is the head of our Lake District.
Yeah.
So
I've sent some communications this way.
Okay. You've gotten resistance?
No responses.
Oh. Well, it is volunteers.
Yeah, so. Exactly. So this stuff happens. So,
but like, I know there's aquatic, you know, species controls that we do. I think Powers Lake's similar. Each of the lakes in the county has a district that cares.
Yeah.
Takes great lengths of this stuff. Same thing with boat monitoring and things like that.
Yeah. So. Yeah, there's some great volunteers out there, and I try to make my rounds every couple of years and knock on the door, even if I, you know, people have said no in the past. I try to, because there is that turnover too.
So you're coming at it from the UW Extension side through the Sea Grant?
Yeah. And so I'm not DNR, but I work very closely with the DNR, and that's kind of a benefit.
And your position's around to stay for a while, or it's not just here for
no,
a few years and it's gone?
Exactly here. So as long as the state continues to hand money down to the county and the counties are good with Wisconsin Sea Grant performing the duties for them, then I'll be right.
Okay. All right. Just seems like there's some overlap, but you want to be working together instead of, apart.
With the DNR, that is?
Not only with the DNR, but with the local.
Yeah. And a lot of what I do is trying to get them involved, giving them the training and the resources, empower them to take those actions. And then I just try to fill in the gaps, based on my own capacity where I can. So I do the water gap inspections, but I can only go, 4 hours, one lake. I can maybe hit like 3 lakes in a county a year, and then I gotta do some other things, so.
And like as far as like getting results for the monitoring and testing, like dropping the psyche discs and stuff like that, I think some people do that. So it's just like a matter of getting the data, right?
Yeah, so I think it's either the U.S. Geological Survey or someone from the DNR does water quality collecting for, I want to say it's Lake Mary. They do have a couple lakes that they like to track long-term trends on. It's a sample they collect throughout the state, sampling of lakes, and I know Lake Mary is one of them. I think that might be the only one in our area that falls into that.
Okay.
But I did talk to someone last year about Elizabeth Lake, getting someone involved. It just didn't materialize into anything.
Okay.
So, but yeah, I'll follow up with you and see what we can make happen.
Okay. Sounds good.
Brown and red-legged crayfish. What is the danger of them?
So, you mean the rusty?
Rusty.
We have a lot of rusty crayfish. They're very aggressive towards native crayfish populations. They reproduce pretty, a lot. That's what they're kind of known for, but just, their aggressive nature.
Similar size?
Yeah, you can find them small, larger, depending. The red swamp crayfish, or were you just primarily talking about the rusty?
Yeah, I saw the red as well, but I hadn't heard that one before.
Yeah, that one's, so when we talk about crayfish, we see rusty crayfish a lot in our areas. The other types of crayfish, and there are a lot more than I know of, we see them more through pet shops, and people bringing them home as a pet and then accidentally releasing them or purposely releasing them in a pond if they don't want it, or even crayfish boils. There's crazy stories about crawfish getting away from crayfish boils and somehow ending in, and I think that's what happened in Milwaukee County with the red swamp crayfish, I heard.
So they had them shipped in for a boil, and that was that.
Yeah.
It caught my attention because when I was 50 years ago, we'd go out and you'd fill 5 gallons with blue pincher crayfish in an hour.
Yeah.
And you'd have a great boil. But now you can hardly find them.
Yeah. I mean, that could be because of the...
But then I would find the supplanters, the gray or the rusty or the red leg, and I don't find that either, so...
But you're not seeing them either? Yeah, I don't know why you're not seeing... I mean, at least for the native population, I can assume it's like the rusty have competing now. But why you might not see crayfish as much anymore could be just degradation of the stream or river that it's on, too. Then again, invasive species are known to be very hardy towards kind of more extreme environmental conditions, so more pollutants are able to kind of cope with that better than native
farmers. Do they eat?
I don't know, I've never eaten one. Don't leave one in your cooler for more than a day, though.
Okay, any other questions?
All right.
Thank you, Scott.
You had done such a good job that nobody has any questions for you.
Well, you follow up with me if you do, or if you have anyone in your areas that has concerns about aquatic invasive species or anything related really to water. Like I said, I work closely with the DNR, so it might not be invasive species, but shoreline restoration, grants, anything, I can at least get you pointed in the right direction.
Okay.
Thank you.
Perfect. Thank you very much. What's next, ma'am?
All right, educator reports. But before we do that, I'd like to introduce our newest educator, but I'm not going to make her do her report first, because, right, pressure, we don't do that. But I'd like to introduce you to Camille Carlson. She is our Positive Youth Development Educator. So she started with us on January 22nd. We're happy to have her with us. And maybe if you all don't mind just quickly introducing yourselves just so she knows who you are.
Sure.
That'd
Absolutely.
Be great.
Well, welcome aboard, Camille.
Thank you. It's good to be here and meet all of you.
All right. Yeah. So I'm Aaron Carroll. I'm the chairman of this committee, but I'm a supervisor from the 23rd District, which is out of the far west end, which covers Twin Lakes and Powers Lake area. So...
We've kind of met. I pushed an email off to West OSHA to encourage our YEAG program a little bit. Apparently, we got a pretty good response. But I'm Brian Bashaw, District 19. So, Bristol, Brighton, Summers, and just the western edge of Summers, Paris, Oklahoma. So, I have a big district.
I'm Aksa Safadi, and I'm a youth and governance representative.
John Franco, I'm the supervisor for District 13, which is far west side of Kenosha. It's still in the city on either side of the highway between 88th and like 140th or so, and 75th Street and 60th Street.
I'm Daniel Gashke, County Board Supervisor for District 7, which is the very center city of Kenosha. I serve as the vice chair of this committee, and I'm glad to have you on board.
Ed Kubicki, District 6, Kenosha's near north side. Soon to be retired from County Building. So I see a new face next year.
All right, and then I think we'll start right here to my right with Mary and go around the table.
Sure. So have started a new partnership with Extension Kenosha County, a couple of my colleagues with Extension Racine County, and then also community impact programs, foster care programming to provide some professional development to the licensed foster parents. So we have a first quarter schedule set. I did a training last week with a group of about 16. So this is just helping them achieve the 10 ongoing hours that are required every year. And then also a new Encouraging Financial Conversations series started also last week. And that is geared toward folks that are more in like human services positions to help them gain more skills and confidence around talking with clientele about personal finance or money management issues.
Your foster care training you mentioned, is that focused more on like financial things or mental health or what is this?
So the one that I did this last month, it was about more behavioral health with like stress reduction. And then the two colleagues from Racine, they focus more on parenting topics. So they will be handling more of that in March and April.
That's great. Thanks.
Alrighty, we'll move on to the world of economic development. So I don't have a ton of updates right now. The biggest thing right now, too, is with our lovely broadband stuff. We are currently waiting right now to hear back for our BEAD funding. They should hopefully, I got from UW Extension that the earliest they can kind of have out that kind of challenge process will be on February 16th, but that will be the earliest, so we haven't heard anything yet. But also in the kind of scope of broadband, we are having a regional planning workshop out in, it's going to be at Parkside, and it's going to be on the 21st, so I believe it's going to be a copay of $20 or $25, but it'll really be kind of talking about all the different kind of processes that can happen with broadband and all the education process as well. A bunch of UW specialists will be coming in, so I've been helping them secure a location, and then once they have everything set, I will also be helping kind of get that marketing out there in the community. Economic development indicator report for CABA, that is on like the last week or so. I should hopefully be getting that to them soon, which is something I've been working on. Also homegrown, we are meeting a little bit more frequently too, and we have the date set, which will be April 3rd. And then I'm also thinking about if supervisors are interested in coming too. We're focusing more on Twin Lakes, Paddock Lake, and Salem Lakes, just kind of creating the entrepreneurial space. So if you are all interested in attending, you're more than welcome to. I haven't sent out a ton of marketing materials yet, but hopefully sometime in March we'll be getting those out. And I believe that is all the updates I have in our little realm. So please let me know if you have any questions.
Yeah. Yes. As Pam shared, I started on the 22nd, so I've mostly just have been doing a lot of trainings. Savannah took me on a tour of the county as I'm new to like southeastern Wisconsin. I did my studies in Milwaukee, so Kenosha County is a little different, obviously. So it was nice for her to show me around, and I'm excited to keep learning. I have been working on the YIG nominations. We have 61 nominations this year for YIG, which is awesome. A variety of schools submitted, like Lakeview Tech, Indian Trail High School, K-Tech High School, Riverside, Bradford, Sherland Lutheran, Wilmot, Westosha, and like St. Joseph Catholic Academy. So there's a good selection. As I was reviewing the notes and discussing with Pam, a bunch of questions have come up, so I was just wondering if I could ask you guys about the interview process for YIG. In my predecessor's notes, it seemed like individual interviews were the standard.
Yeah, so
you guys are here for the public hearing?
Yes.
So it'll start at 7 o'clock.
Okay.
I don't know if it'll be in here or in the other room.
It said that we're on the calendar for the big room, so.
Okay,
oh,
okay. Check this right across.
We'll be right over there. I now have that we're in conference room B. I think it was changed to here.
Hold on.
Yeah. It may be changed to here, guys.
Yeah. It was updated or changed.
You can hang tight. We're just going to wrap this up here in the next 15 minutes, and then we'll start.
Okay.
Sorry about that.
No, it's okay.
Daniel, you want to answer your question?
Yes.
Yeah, so YIG interview, you said your predecessor's notes said, and I didn't catch what they said.
But it just seemed like individual interviews of the invited youth. Like,
I think she wants to know how it worked.
Oh, yeah, okay, so sure. So typically, both the current youth and governance participants, so AXA and then her colleague, and then typically it's been two committee members. So last year it was Brian and I. So it's typically a panel of four interviewing one student. And then typically the positive youth educator kind of helps, take notes, does paperwork and things like that, but doesn't necessarily participate in the interview process, and we had kind of like a rubric, so to speak, and we asked the exact same question to each of them, and then we scored them like in real time, and then at the end of the night we'd compile all the scores, and then the next night do the same thing. So that was at least the last several years that's how we've done it. So
okay.
We've done it both virtually and in person, and just made it work whatever we need to do. So.
Okay, awesome. How long are the interview slots?
Very short.
10?
There's four questions, 5 to 10 minutes each.
Yeah.
It was rapid fire.
Okay.
So I don't know if They're scheduled every 15 minutes, maybe, if I'm remembering correctly. But I think the interview itself is typically 10 minutes. It's pretty quick. Yeah.
Okay, awesome. And it's over a 2-day period then? Or
historically, it has been.
What dates would you guys like to set for that then? I was looking at the last 2 weeks of March. I'm not able to do Tuesday evenings, so if like Monday and Wednesday would be able to be accommodated, that would be great.
I guess it would depend on who's going to be participating. I'd be happy to, you know, be on that interview panel again. So I guess it would depend on who's participating.
Yeah, and some of that might depend on the election.
Yeah.
Well
this
March.
Is pre-
yeah, this is March. It's
this
pre-election.
This is pre-election. It'll occur, but...
Oh, yeah, you're right.
Yep.
We're in that cycle,
right.
And that's right at the end of the...
Yeah, okay, so no, we're good then.
Committee should still be intact.
Yeah, committee's intact, yeah. So whoever wants to partake in that. The challenge that I have is the last weekend of March is spring break for kiddos, so I'm usually already got plans to be out of town for that week.
Yeah, so my Thursdays are already committed. You want to do back-to-back nights?
Doesn't have to be. Doesn't sound
Monday, Wednesday, you had suggested.
Yeah.
For me, if I'd be serving on that, Monday, Wednesday, the 25th and 27th would work. I'd be happy to serve in that role again.
Good.
Yeah.
You're definitely experienced virtually and in person.
Aww.
All right, so I don't know, Brian, are you interested in serving again, or John, or somebody else?
Yeah, but
somebody
I have
else,
challenges.
Okay.
It depends on, I have to look at my calendar.
Okay.
I haven't joined the 21st century.
I can show you my calendar on my phone.
I have a phone, but I don't do calendars or something.
Sure.
Fashion.
No, so I'm willing. Dates. Just trade emails.
Yeah.
We'll figure it out.
Yeah, okay. Sounds good.
But
good.
Yeah, please reach out, let us know if you know you have further follow-up questions, and happy to help try to guide you.
I do have more questions, if that's okay.
Absolutely.
So the applications are due on March 8th right now, and if it's tentatively the 25th and 27th, that seems like a short window to be in communication with the youth about when their interview is scheduled. So I just didn't know like when the latest would be to let them know by that day, and if we could coordinate that before.
And I think part of that is they are screened, and it's our impression that Erica has screened them in the past, yet we notice that they're written scores. So it appears that the four panelists scored the written part, but does that come like did you give your scores to Erica the day of the interview, let's say, or were those already submitted in advance so that Camille would know that these are the people to be invited to the interview? That's where we were like not sure about that.
I thought we saw everybody and we scored them and gave them to Erica and then she ran a filter on it, but it was restricted to how many per school.
Right, but there's two parts to the rubric. So we scored their written application, and then we scored their oral interview.
Yeah, which we did ourselves.
And so we scored the written applications before their oral interview. So we did come to the interviews with the written already scored.
Yeah.
Okay.
And so that's kind of a, because somebody might be a better communicator on paper, and somebody might be a better communicator in person. So. We kind of do those as two separate scores. Mm-hmm. So
sometimes you wonder who was doing the communicating on paper.
Is another part of your question to be if you have a larger pool than you want to work with, how do you, is there pre-screening? Is that what your question is?
Yeah, like how did, because I think there's 25 slots.
So last year, now you have 60, how many nominations? 60?
61.
Okay. And so only a fraction of those are actually going to turn in an application. That's just the reality.
Sure.
So it might self-select. I mean, you may only get 25 people who turn in an application out of those 60.
Okay.
I mean, that's the reality. So just because somebody's nominated doesn't mean they're automatically going to take the initiative to follow up with an application. So I think that, that the last couple of years, it, the numbers have been kind of close to those 25-ish slots.
Okay.
So we, when Erica did process the paperwork as they came in, we didn't necessarily have to, I don't think she had to do a lot of screening. There's almost basically anybody who turned in. Now, if we have 40 people turn in an application, I guess we'll have to come up with some way to cut that down.
She would remove incompletes, and she would remove those that didn't meet the qualifications. In other words, GPA, et cetera.
Sure.
So
sure.
Some people didn't make it past that point. But
and then there's
the
a question,
was,
can you make it to the bus tour?
Yes.
Can you make it to certain meetings? And some of them already, you know, hey, my family's going to be in Europe that week or whatnot, and, you know, so.
That makes sense. Thank you.
And then the other thing I think was important, because I think we had two alternates then, and actually this time around there was some discussion of whether we would replace alternates because there were some people that weren't, some students that weren't able to make it to the meetings.
Yeah.
So it's like, well, if you're an alternate, we would certainly want that person, and they wanted to be partaking in it, that they would be able to. So I think that that's important. Question as well is just making sure that, look, you know, there is a commitment to this, just want to make sure that you do, you know, you have that commitment, because there's others that may want to, and if you can't, then, you know, we'd rather let people that can make it come.
Absolutely.
Yep. Maybe one more question so that we can hear the other educators' reports, because we can communicate via email too.
We could also have a conversation
that.
Offline too.
Oh, that too.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Oh.
Yeah.
It's an important part.
It very much is. Yes, it is, because it's part of the committee.
Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah. Okay. And I guess my last question, I didn't know if I, like, if the chairperson is normally there for the interview process, but it sounds like he isn't, so I don't have to invite Chairman Gabe to.
Generally, it's more of a discussion with the chair to go through who the candidates are and whatnot, and I think the chair approved which committees to a degree, or had input into.
I think that was a little bit of a special situation since Aaron was new to the committee and new to the county board as a whole. I don't think typically the county board chair has taken a strong involvement in PDEC. I think that was a little bit unusual.
My understanding was Gabe didn't get an input, or this current chair did not get an input, prior chair did. So there was some tension.
I think I've got the right people in place to make it fix.
Thank you for answering my questions.
I don't think there's a right or a wrong answer to that kind of stuff, so.
Gotcha. So if you're in Switzerland, everything's okay.
April 2nd, we might all be out with Ed.
I'm ready to come to homegrown.
Not all of you, some of you are running unopposed. In fact, I feel like this committee's unopposed.
All right, so we've got 6 minutes before 7 o'clock, and we do have a hard stop. So,
I will keep it super brief. I'm with the Foodwise team. So we are currently doing education at, so physically I'm holding class at Kabasi, but it's Habitat homeowners, or actually future homeowners, that are my audience at the moment, about 7 ladies that I see each week. We have a new teen cuisine series going at Ruther High School. I've had a few of those this year, but a lot of success with those. We're at Epsilon in the second grade class, a couple of them in English, a couple of them in Spanish. Also had once a year we take part in the Senior Centers Without Walls, like a conference call that Kenosha County holds. I think Kabasi is the one who facilitates it. So we had 6 older adults on our call this year, earlier this month. And then we also are in Head Start classrooms, about 8 of them currently at 6 different schools and sites. So. So lots of different places around the county currently. Questions, or if I can pass it on to Carolyn.
So we are still growing like crazy. As of today, our current enrollment is 707 4-H youth.
And we started about a dozen clubs back up again in January. We rolled out Outdoor Adventure, which is our newest project that I wanted to create so it would be appealing to those people without animals. We had about 54 sign up. I've got a dozen high school ambassadors that are fantastic. They've rolled out a Clover Bud Night for 40 kids, 40 K through 2 kids came. The Outdoor Adventure is letting us kind of partner with Pringle and Vaughn and Wilmot Mountain, Hawthorne Hollow, so it's nice to make those connections. And also starting to make connections with Carthage and Parkside and Gateway.
That's right, I know we're short on time, but I want to make a statement that comes from couple of different committees, but there's been a lot of fires, the inspector says, oh, it's 4-H, so kids with chickens and things like that is his rationale for why we're getting barn fires. But
barn fires?
Yeah.
I guess maybe
add to your safety discussion, you know, just be aware, as soon as we put heaters outside, we have a list, so be cognizant of where.
Okay, I'll mention that to my animal project leaders, too.
Four in one day, so.
Oh, okay.
Thanks.
All right. Any other comments?
BJ?
I'll stop. Sorry, you're on the
other side. So we established a partnership with the UW-Madison Department of Climatology Office. So through this partnership, we're going to see a new weather station coming up at KCC here in spring. This is a $10,000 equipment, and it's been federally funded. And so this important equipment is going to help me out with my research study, and precisely collecting data like, you know, what is the soil temperature at 8-inch depth, 12-inch depth, what is the soil moisture. Those data would be helping in assessing the drought situation in Kenosha area, especially in the western part of Kenosha. And those information will be all online, so anyone can access it. So that's another crucial benefit that we're going to get out of this weather station. It's not going to serve me, but also the entire public as well, too. So quickly, Brood 17 cicadas, they are coming up. Somewhere in late spring, millions going to emerge from the soil in the west part of Kenosha. The last occurrence was happened in 2007. So we are expecting again in the west part of Kenosha, Lake Geneva. So millions going to emerge. The soil temperature needed is 64.5 degree Fahrenheit. The way how the weather goes, we really don't know whether we're going to have an early emergence or it's going to be back again to late May, early June. So we might be partnering with the Parks Department once we get the Parks Department director comes on board to have like a cicada welcoming party and have some selfies and all the kind of fun stuff. You know, so just watch out for that. So
I thought we're gonna have a cookout.
Oh. I don't know, it's rich in protein, but I don't
eat
cicada stew.
Yeah.
And the other thing to keep in mind too, I remember, is the spongy moths too.
Oh yeah,
so that's another whole discussion.
So we hope we have a wet spring to finish that threat that's coming.
Haven't had a wet winter, so.
And if you guys remember last year, I gave a talk about the spotted lanternfly. Mm-hmm. So they are in Chicago in a couple of spots. So I've been invited actually to do a field inspection with the DACAP people down there. Mm-hmm. So that's already in a close to a door right now. So any moment, we could find it in Wisconsin.
Okay.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Okay. All right. Pam, any director updates?
I have a handout for some virtual learning options. You can share that with anyone that you'd like. We had an ag educator say yes and then backed out for personal reasons. So we are back to square one. Been working with the institute director, the regional program manager. We have some ideas. So hopefully next month I'll have better news for you. So I'm working on that. Annual report is out, like meaning we had given all the information, the person who helps us put it together. So hopefully we can have that for you next month. And other than that, I think that is everything. So thank you for your time this evening. We appreciate it.
All right. Thanks, Pam. And for thanks, everybody. Thanks for coming.
Thanks, everyone.
Happy Valentine's Day. And if you didn't, you have one too. I've got some chocolates here for you.
It's all the right.
Hey.
Nice.
Yeah. Did I see that you sat right on the general city?
Well, you didn't hear the story. He got them for his wife.
Yeah.
He's
going
to try and get them over.
It must have been a news article or something there. I was like, wait a second. I was like, I know her. I was like, well, and I never put the cash on the other.
Thank you for doing this. Oh, sure. Thank you. Turn this off, just in general. Okay. But yeah.